Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a minor hello, join us. We have talk guests every Thursday starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the talk's website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702 or Starfleet Universe On Call. Either one, you will find us. And for the best online web experience, go to twitch.tv. Yes, we're on twitch.tv. Go to twitch.tv/SFU On Call and you will find us there. You will join the chat room, watch my lovely face, and possibly even my computer. Every once in a while, I do some screen sharing to see documents and SSDs and all kinds of other visual things that you might actually be interested in seeing. When just listening to my lovely voice is not enough. And of course, you need to contact me for any reason. My email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to, you can follow me on Twitter. My accounts are SFU On Call. Big surprise. Also, Paul Franz, PAULFRANZ. There is no T in that, so remember that. Don't ask. And this reminder that I haven't actually posted here for a while, but when I do, things are usually about tech, about being Catholic, or about being an O's fan. So that's probably one thing I might still post on Twitter, which is that's where all of the baseball seems to be discussed. And last and certainly not least, Franz Games. Just a nice little Twitter account there to tell you what's going on in the world of SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Moving on to the news from ADB this week. Not much, but they have been working on FedCom Gunboat's attack. The round one edits are done on the rulebook. Also, they're arranging for new F&E box game maps, some reprints for that. And that's about it that's new for this week. Of course, as a reminder, there's all kinds of free stuff on StarfleetGames.com. Just go there. There's all kinds of stuff. Go to the Master Index. You can find all kinds of things for FedCom, for SIP, Starfleet Battles, for Starfleet Battle Force, for Federation and Empire. All those games are all there's stuff there, including for Starfleet Battle Force. If you want to, there are some additional cards that you can use there for playtest, that they have available for people to download, print out, and use as part of their game, which kind of seems weird to me because I would think you had to print out and copy on one of those other cards, because otherwise you know what card it is. Moving onward and forward, when it comes to the SFB Online tournaments, the Sapphire Crown 2 is being set up. I still have to set up the tournament page, but we've got the people that are going to be involved in that. So just a reminder on that. Also, when it comes to the online client stuff, yes, I've actually, I mentioned last week I was working on the HTTP based server and the client and having it support it, and that's actually coming quite well. I got it to the point where it now you can do chatting back and forth and there's no problem there. And when it comes to chat rooms, I still have to work on private chat, DMs, private chats. Got to work on that. And then I have to work on the whole idea of when you, if you've started a game and someone enters a room, then getting what's happening in the room first. So that everything will work fine for that. So it's coming. It's coming. I'm happy. Things are working. I got it so that if you've got two people in the room and then start adding pieces, you can move things around, all that, and it all works. So I just have to work on the finer details. So there's quite a bit of progress going well with that. And after I get that done, what I'm hoping to do is move servers, update the client, release an updated client, so any bug fixes and so forth, any enhancements will also be part of that release. And I'll probably have a backup server available just in case there are unknown bugs. I'm hoping that I can get some beta testers first, though. Moving onward and forward, when it comes to the library, there's not much happening in library. I'm pretty sure I told you last week, but I'll say it again, that I've updated the Lyran section of the library for SLP Online, stuff that I've been waiting for a while. I finally got around to adding. But that's about it at the moment. No updates on the FedCom library. So with that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one, the old Paul Runs, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, well, you got me. You've got Doug. Hey, Doug, how you doing?
Hi.
Hi.
I'm here. How are you guys doing?
Good. And lastly, of course, we have David in the chat room. I'm sure there's going to be other people in the chat room at the moment. Takes usually a little bit of time for the chat room to fill up. And Chris, yeah, Chris is over there on the chat room for Twitch already. We've got three people, including myself. Oh, and I don't know who that is. Dave. Okay, Dave. Okay. I saw a call sign or user ID, whatever they call it, on Twitch, which I did not recognize, but now I do. So, and of course, it's raining.
It might be me.
Well, it's raining here. I can hear that. And hopefully we won't lose power or anything goofy like that. That would be awful. So we're not supposed to get any lightning until late tonight. So everything should be over before we have any lightning and have the possibility of losing power. But you never know. But anyhow, to get on to a more positive note, of course, we have Gamers of Winter coming up this weekend. So if you're in the Harrisburg area, relatively, you know, within an hour's drive of Harrisburg, you know, and you don't have anything else to do, come and join us. You know, hopefully you'll hear this before that time. That means it's running both Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. So, and I will be there Saturday and Sunday. So if you want to see me and meet my lovely face, you can head out there Saturday or Sunday, and I will be there. I'll be having my Starfleet Battle stuff, my Federation Commander stuff, my Starfleet Marine stuff, also one or two decks of Starfleet Battle Force. So if you want to play any of those games, come on out. Let's play. And you know, there's also other games that I definitely enjoy playing, like Puerto Rico. What are some of the ones we've been playing lately? And I keep forgetting. I was gonna say Galactic Conquest, but that's not the game that gets played every once in a while, which is like a 6-hour game.
Light Imperium.
Thank you. Hey, I don't play it. Come on. Like the last time I saw people play that game, I can't say that. I was going to say, like the first time I saw people play the game. I remember Barry playing that for easily, I think it was 8 hours. It was, you know, they played. Yeah, we have to take a break and get something to eat. And then they came back.
Next, I mean, if we really wanted to push the envelope, I could set up Antietam. That's an entire day.
Oh, you want a couple?
Gettysburg.
Yeah, you want a couple days? Get F&E out.
There's that too, huh?
Hey, come on.
That is a suggestion.
Oh, understood. Well, I can't say I'd play F&E with anyone because I don't know how to play F&E. So I can't say I would.
F&E is like really simple as far as like the mechanics go. It's probably the simplest thing that EB's put out. Just that the size and complexity of the game overall is kind of pretty large.
Right. Well, it's like, come on.
But as far as learning to play, I can teach somebody to play in like 10 minutes.
Chris is saying FNE is beast of a game.
Pretty easy.
Yeah, well, FNE is kind of like SFB in that overall, the game mechanics are pretty simple. They really are. You know, you can cover the game mechanics of SFB in like 2 pages. You know, you can cover it in 2 pages. But then you get into the rules, the other rules like interactions. In the case of FNE, a lot of those things have to do with logistics, timing of what you can do, what can when you can do a conversion, and things, all this kind of things that are kind of idiosyncrasies for playing the game properly. I still remember the first time I played SFB, I played it so bad. And this was just me by myself. This is when I bought the, back in college, I bought the original Commander's Edition rules, the volume one. And I played the basic edition of the rules. That means no overloads, no mid-turn speed changes, you know, just basic stuff. And I was playing, you know, classic battle, Federation versus Klingon. And what happens? I get it so they get range zero. What happens with range zero? You can't fire. You can't fire your heavy weapons because of there was no overloads in the basic game either. So you can't fire at range zero without it being overloaded, at least when it comes to the Fed. You know, so it was, yeah, Chris, this was before ADB created the cadet training manual. Back in the days of Commander's Edition. So,
now, when you were on
Yep, when I was in college, this was, I bought it, my sophomore, the reason I remember this is because I remember where I played it. I played it in my room at International House in Philadelphia. This was my sophomore year. Okay, Drexel is a 5-year college, so it goes freshman, sophomore, pre-junior, junior, senior. And I was a sophomore, and the sophomore year, they ran out of spaces at the dorms. So Drexel University had to go and rent a floor from the International House. They leased out the floor for the year, and they assigned an RA that stayed at International House, and that was our dorm. And that's the only reason I remember it was because I remember I was in that room, I was in that area, you know, in my room when I was doing this. And so that means it was my sophomore year that I was playing SFB. It was kind of cool because of my, what I did was I had co-op. I got a co-op program. My co-op program was actually working for DPSC in South Philly. And fortunately, a friend of mine, told me that his grandmother had a room for me. You know, he stayed with his grandmother, and they had a room that, you know, I could sack out on, you know, which unfortunately I didn't have to pay anything, but, you know, I'd make up breakfast every morning. Usually it was like eggs and scrapple. Which was my first introduction to Scrapple. Actually, Scrapple was pretty good. You know, I fried up nice and, you know, you have to fry it up so you get the nice crispness on the outside. Cause without that, you know, it doesn't really, it's not, what's the point? You know, it's really mushy. It doesn't have much flavor. And I have that for breakfast, you know, that's some eggs. But anyway, you know, during that time, Paul Keck actually stayed at, I don't know how he got it, but he actually stayed at International House. I forget, I think, yeah, I'm not sure how, but he did. And actually, we get together at International House, and we sit there in the main gathering space, and we played SFB. You know, we start early. We start around between 6 and 8 o'clock, and we'd sit there and we would do it until early morning. And early morning, I'd go home. I'd get on the I'd grab the subway. You know, I'd actually get on the subway early in the morning, and head back up to North Philly, because that's where my friend's grandmother's place was North Philly. So that was an interesting way, you know. It was kind of cool. Excuse me? I'm seeing the reading here. Say, Dave said, I got into SFB by accident. I thought it was a new edition of the FASA game. Wow.
Wow.
Well, that accident, my dear friend, yeah, saved your butt, because I'm sorry. As I explained last week to Jeff, the FASA version game sucked. Oh, I played SFB, and then I bought the FASA, Star Trek tactical game. I think that's the name of it, something like that. And I tried to play it, and I'm doing this. I'm learning how you move and how what you're supposed to do, and I'm going, this is insane. Because the big issue that I really felt with it was that you had to power your shields using the power that's generated from your ship. There was no like SFB where you have that for a certain power level, you have so many shield boxes. You don't. You're powering one arc of the shield. So to say the very least, it was insane. You know, so I tried to understand the rules. I never played anyone it. I just tried to play it by myself to understand the rules, and I realized no, this is insane, because it really makes no sense. And SFB makes a heck of a lot more sense overall and how the mechanics worked. So I never played that game ever again. Obviously, I probably threw it out at some point. Dave mentioned how you powered each shield individually when it comes to the FASA game. Yeah. So Chris was saying that it was really meant for ship-to-ship combat portion of RPG. Well, I still think the mechanics sucked. It doesn't matter if it was designed to be part of an RPG. What is it? Oh, jeez. This is awful. Traveler, that's it. Because Traveler is RPG, correct?
Traveler is, but the FASA actually, I think, had a Star Trek role-playing game.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I know FASA did.
Which was not too horrible from what I understand, but I've never played that one.
Right. But my understanding is that Travel also had, tactical combat that you could play. And I'm willing to bet that a heck of a lot better than what FASA had, at least my understanding. I never heard anyone complaining about it, of course. Same time, I never heard anyone complain about the FASA because I never talked to anyone about it. Oh, I used to play...
They're very much apples and orange.
Yeah. I played RPG one time. Actually, many times. Rollmaster was my favorite game system. Was Rollmaster.
Yeah.
Just because of the critical hit system. I mean, critical failure system. It was fun. It was a fun game.
Oh, yeah. Rollmaster is brutal when it comes to that stuff. But yeah, it's also fun. I think the thing that really was great about Rollmaster back in the day, when I first came across it, was that compared to first edition Dungeons and Dragons, it gave you, as a player, a lot more control over character arc as far as like what the character could do. It had essentially a crafting system that wasn't just roll on a table and that's your character's like profession outside of engineering.
Right. And
And you could
also,
actually.
I'm sorry. Continue.
But basically, it also kind of it had a thing that went along with the lines of a pet peeve of mine, which is the where people try to like over-engineer the abstract gaming thing. Like when we talked about this maybe a few months ago about how people wanted to, a lot of people get caught in a trap at least once in a while of trying to rewrite the rules because, I'm an engineer and I think that it would work this way instead of that way. Or they try to go into nitty-gritty details where a box is a unit and but they want to totally redefine how the thing works, whatever the thing is. And in D&D was a very abstract system to start with, even though it comes out of basically a tabletop wargaming thing into the role-playing aspect. And Rollmaster gave you an incredible amount of detailing and customization for your character without necessarily going into the an insane level of detailing. And it also just had a totally different take on combat and everything else,
Yep.
and
Agreed.
combat being very deadly,
Oh yeah.
essentially in Rollmaster if you're reckless. If you go in with the dungeon crawl attitude, you will just get basically butchered initially, and then learn and redo what you're doing. So.
Yeah. One of the things I also liked about Rollmaster was the way they did training up and things like that. So you didn't just get experience points that all of a sudden you're in the next level. No, you trained up for different abilities is what you would do. And that was
Yeah,
something,
you had to choose, spend your skill points.
right? And
You had to spend skill points on different stuff.
And you would, and usually what would happen is that during the campaign, you'd have people, let's say, in their downtime, we've settled in for the night, basically you have people working on their skill. That's one thing they'll say, they'll tell the dungeon master, okay, I'm going to work on this skill or this skill or this skill, for the day. So their kind of idea is practicing to work up on that skill, to improve that until you get to the next level, or you improve, So that was kind of cool. And I agreed, especially with the combat system. The great thing about it wasn't it wasn't just hit points. You could do these critical damage, and I mean, like, cut off a guy's arm, cut off, like, you can actually do critical failures where you cut off your own arm. Things like that, or stab yourself. You can do some crazy stuff, and that
Well,
was part of the fun
that's
of it.
very interesting. Yeah, and the magic system could be brutal too. Quite brutal.
Right. Oh.
Especially with spell failures.
Oh yeah, I forgot about those because I was never a wizard. I was always a warrior of some sort, usually a paladin was what I was. Oh, jeez. Darf, don't look out the window, paladin. Because I got that name from one of the campaigns we were in. And what did I do? Is I hear a noise outside the window when we're at this inn. And I look out the window. What do I see? I see vampires crawling up the wall. And of course, what happens? I get attacked.
Ha
It's like, and the GM goes, okay. That's it. Okay, no, we're backing up here because no one's that dumb to actually poke their head out the window to see what's out the window. So he let me because basically I died. I died because I was basically stupid. So he let me t let us start over again because basically it wasn't going to look very good if in the campaign I died. One of the like three characters died. It makes things more difficult. So,
hard to do in that game.
yeah. So he went back, and then ever since that point, I was because I named the guy Darf, Darf, Darf. So I have nicknamed. Don't look out, Darf. Don't look out the window, Paladin. So it was fun. We had a lot of fun playing that game. But anyway, one topic I actually wanted to get on for this evening was of that I was thinking about something I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, and actually I think it's 3 weeks ago now because that's when Gary was on, and that was the whole idea of a SFB game that's more like Starfire in the way that damage allocation and that kind of thing is done. And I thought Call to Arms, that's it. Call to Arms Starfleet could do the job. I was thinking about that. It's like, oh, maybe that could do it. Maybe that can do it. And then I look at it and yes and no. The problem is that with Call to Arms, it still has too much detail. You have your phasers, you have your photons, you have your drones, all of this. And I'd like to have it even more generic. If you want to still have the whole idea of arcs, in my mind, what I would want is simplified when it comes to the arcs. You basically have an offensive potential out of from each arc that you're gonna allow. Because I think I forget with Call to Arms what they use. Because I'm pretty sure it's not 60-degree arcs. I think it's like 45-degree arcs or 90-degree arcs. I forget which. I forget what their increment is. I'm just gonna see if I don't see. I don't see, okay, it has movement here. I'm just want combat. Eligible target. Firing arc. Bump. Okay, that is looking at. So I don't see them describing the arcs. That's why I just want to find that. I don't see it. So that's what I would like to see. We can still have drones and have plasmas. The whole idea in that case was that drones would be long, basically seeking weapons that are longer range versus plasmas, which are shorter range but do more damage. And not sure how many how that would work. You know, would I want that to be more of like a direct fire thing, or would I want it actually to be seeking weapons, you know, units on the board? That's the still haven't figured that one out. But yeah, because I think that'll be kind of, I think that would be great. You know, as I said, the whole idea of damage allocation of just following the line, you know, you don't do any, there's no die roll. You just go, the only thing is you figure out how much, the only thing you do a die roll for is how much damage do you do to the ship. You know, you subtract out the defense, the current defensive, you know, shield, basically about a shield. Maybe have a defensive factor to for fighting off seeking weapons, or in the case of when you're close in, like say range 2, or maybe even range 1, and say, okay, you can add your defensive factor to your offensive factor, and you can add them, and you can basically increase the amount of damage you do to your opponent at that range, and so forth. You know, so interesting. You know, it's an idea of a game that I would like to try to do, because I still have this idea for I call it SFU ships, Starfleet Universe ships, which is basically a simplified ships. One of the big things for that was also that it would be pre-plotted movement. The movement wouldn't be that big. I was thinking about the maximum of maybe 6 moves per turn. You know, and I was thinking about maybe kind of make it like Silent Death, in that you only fire at the end of the turn. You know, things like that simplify it. I'm just, the big thing for me when it comes to that idea that I have is whether, how much of Starfleet battles can be retained? Because I still would like to have it so that you can retain a lot of what makes SFB SFB. You know, but I want to avoid certain things, you know, that definitely FedCon was doing its best to do, but it was unsuccessful. One of the things was FedCon was unsuccessful in my mind was, I think the original idea, and I never heard Steve Cole, Ken Burnside, anyone from ADB. Ken Burnside was with ADB at one time, so just to remind people of that fact. And that is that they wanted it so that you didn't have an EA. All you did was you would set your speed, then based on your speed, then you still have to kind of do an energy, you have stuff to do with the managing of the energy during the turn. But you didn't have to do an EA. But as soon as you added multi-turn arming weapons, that goes out the window. And that's where FedCom fell down in my mind. Because I said, I feel like that's, they wanted it to be simplified to that degree, where you just set your speed, okay, you have this much energy afterwards, and then you can use that energy any way you see fit during the turn. To me, that's what it feels like was, that was the original design. But then, you know, that's great when it comes to disruptors. That's great with drones. That's great with phasers. But as soon as you get multi-turn on weapons, like photons, like hellbores, like plasma torpedoes, you're screwed. Now, the tough part about that is that you have to do multi-turn army weapons, in that You can, if you want to, you can do what Ken Burnside did with, I forget which of his systems it was using. Maybe it was Strike Fleet or something. I forget.
Squadron Strike.
Squadron Strike, maybe. Maybe Squadron Strike.
Squadron.
But the whole idea, one way of a possible solution, but it doesn't quite work. Would be to have it so that it's multi-turn, quote unquote, arming, as in you keep track of if you can fire it or not. It's kind of a cooldown period. But then, usually with a cooldown period, you have to then pay the energy. You have it so that it requires the full, what normally an SAB would be the full 2 turns of energy in a single turn, which makes things totally insane. Or do you do it?
Well, the big the
Yeah, can go.
big thing about SFB compared to most of the other space games or ship-to-ship kind of games is the fact the core of the matter is that your energy allocation is the core of the game. And as you take damage and become less capable with the energy, it changes what you can do tactically in a big way. So if you take that element out, like you're trying to do with, say, FedCom, yeah, you can do that, I guess. But on the other hand, it's not really going to be the same because you're basically gutting the game. Ooh, excuse me. I just like shoved down some food.
Oh, understood, understood. Though there's some things I think
If you want to talk about, design stuff over gamers, I'll be there like for 13 hours a day, and we'll have some time to talk. But the thing is the Star Trek nature of the universe when you get away from, what was script foo versus what is Starfleet battles, where you have very, very defined everything. And if you're trying to recreate it for a role-playing game, you might as well just pick a flavor for the moment and use that, because you could literally almost just say, okay, here's what happened on an F and E scale where your ship's crippled now or whatever. Or you could have the direct drama. I would really suggest if you wanted to use it for a role playing group that you might use the FedCom system for your combat, because it's simpler, it's quicker, and as a GM, you don't necessarily have to roll it out in the same level of detail for purposes of going along with the narrative. If you're familiar with how the SFB thing works, how the FedCom thing works, you can kind of see where it's going and just advance it to that point. Because for the role players, they're not going to be there for the tactical wargaming aspect of it necessarily.
Agreed. Agreed.
But if you're trying to make a different game, if you're trying to make it a different game, then that's a whole other topic on, goals, directions, where do you want to end up at the end of it? And oh my God, we could probably talk for half the day or all day about that on Saturday if you want, after we get the initial rush of people in.
Understood.
And
Understood.
I was going to actually plug a little something.
Sure, go ahead.
If you're listening tonight and you don't know what we're talking about with Gamers Winter, it's a very small gaming event that I run, once a year, was twice a year, might become twice a year again, depending on turnout. But we have role-playing games, tabletop games, board games, card games, whatnot. There's no gambling. It's just like you're basically your pick your convention you like to go to, and then divide the numbers by about several thousand, and that's us. We're running it this weekend at the Your Turn Cafe. We leased the building from them. This is not a normal in-shop kind of event for the place. The Your Turn Cafe is one of these places that's set up under a game store slash cafe model, like, coffee shop, restaurant. And basically, they have very limited hours. They're like, 3 to 9 during the weekdays. I'm not even sure what their weekend hours are. But we're basically expanding their hours, and it's an exclusive event, so you can't hang out in the building if you're not like part of the convention or working for the place. And that's basically it. We'll be there like Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. And if you want to get some SFB in, I think Paul has some time now, potentially.
Definitely.
Since, yeah. And there's that. I've tried to suggest for years if there would be enough interest in a tournament. You could have a live face-to-face tournament instead of online. Or, just run a version of the captain's game where everybody round robins it. For one round, you play your ship with your race. And then the next round, you play as the opponent or somebody else. And, some people would start off as the opponent, and you'd basically switch back and forth. See how that could go, That could be an interesting event to run at this. But then again, we really need maybe a committed turnout for people. There's a little bit of chicken and thing in some of this. I think looking at some of the comments I've had over the years, like some of the miniatures guys won't come out because you can't guarantee them that they have their niche miniatures game there. Then they say, well, if I know, if it's not going to be run by somebody, I'm not going to come out for it and demo or do something else. So, yeah. But on the other hand, we're a pretty convenient drive for anybody from, West Virginia to New York City in that corridor. And the closer you are to Harrisburg, the easier the drive is. I mean, all you're coming in from what, Reading, right? And then Barry comes up from New York,
York.
which is about half hour from it. Sometimes we get a few people that come in for to say hi to Paul and talk about SFB or FedCom or do some of that stuff. But there's that, and kind of funny that you mentioned the whole thing about that, because have you heard about the current scandal-ish thing in the D&D world?
You mean the OGL thing? Open
Yeah,
game
the
license?
OGL thing.
Yeah, open game license.
Yeah, we're like basically WotC and Hasbro were talking about trying to revoke the open license that they set up in perpetuity before Hasbro owned them, what, decades ago. By the way, I think it'll horribly fail because of those two words, or that one term, in perpetuity. Try to put out a new version of D&D and put everybody who wants to put out products that are connected to D&D into this incredibly onerous contract. And now there's all these different groups and companies that were working under that old open license are now talking about just going to something totally different. I think that's awesome in a way.
Well, at the same
There's
time,
that.
here's the one thing about licenses, and that is Okay, in theory, this is in theory. I don't know enough about lawyer talk. They can produce another edition of D&D, which was not under OGL. Now, though, there's one problem. The older editions are still going to be under that OGL. They can't change the license of the current product, current version of the product. I don't think that's possible. In which case, what can happen
One of the various things,
is
right.
they have a splinter. They splinter off, those companies that still want to produce products for D&D. They're going to say, we don't support the latest version of D&D because of we can't do without, we can't do it, basically. And they're going to support only the older versions of it because of the OGL is going to be there. So,
Among other things, there's like a whole bunch of different things going on with it, and there's like so many different lawyers coming at it from like different angles. I mean, if you ask a dozen lawyers for their opinion on pretty much anything, you'll get like 20 different frickin' responses, and that's kind of where that's at in the community. I mean, my YouTube feed is just filling up with some of that and just random feeds about people that are just angry about the whole thing. But what's kind of interesting is they can't copyright some of the basic mechanics and basic terminology. So there's the whole thing is a thorny issue. And I think they may end up either completely backtracking it or it'll be settled in court and there will be probably a big smackdown on Hasbro because of the term in perpetuity and the fact that a lot of the stuff that they want to go after people for is stuff that can't really be completely copyrighted, and some of it may be open now anyway. So, yeah. But remember, hey, at one point, remember this. This is not the stupidest thing I've ever seen. It's just one of the more blatant evil kind of cash grab things, attempts, because they were basically trying to set it so that if you come in under their new license, they had the potential to take your work away from you and sell it themselves,
Excuse
among other
me?
things,
Is that
along with
the
demanding
new
royalties.
license
Can't
that
believe
they
you
want to
that.
put forward? Let's say, okay, you created some IP, you create some expansion onto our
Yes.
IP, and we can
Oh,
take.
major parts of this. Here's the major parts of it and why people are pissed. Okay. Under the old license, it was, open in perpetuity. You don't have to pay them anything. It basically helps them to grow the community from which Wizards basically they benefited tremendously. Because all these secondary companies that opened up to doing stuff, they drove the brand name Dungeons and Dragons, which drives sales for Wizards of the Coast. Okay? And what happened to spark all this off was there was a leak of the license and a leak of a boardroom meeting where one of the Hasbro executives basically made a comment to the effect that they were quite disappointed that they wanted to try to monetize D&D the way that console games and what are those games on your phone called? Console games? Not,
Oh,
you know what I mean.
yeah.
The app game.
Yeah, the apps.
The ones you see all these little commercials for, and they're monetized nine ways to Sunday. They're just blatantly fishing for whales and trying to basically soak you for everything they can along the way. They can't, they've been unable to monetize it now. And that gave birth to them rewriting this thing, which was then leaked. And the gist of this is it's no longer an open license. They still call it an open license, but it's not granted in perpetuity anymore.
Right.
And hi, kitty cat. They basically come out and say, okay, you can still make stuff with our permission. If we don't like your product, we can tell you to stop flat out.
Right.
If we do like your product, we can make our own copy of it and sell it without paying you a dime for it ever. And then if you make X dollar or more annually, you have to pay us a percentage in royalties. And they set that initial cap at like $750,000. So if I wrote a module and threw it up on Amazon and I sold 500,000 copies of the thing at 10 bucks each, I'd owe them X percentage of it. But if they saw it and decided to, they liked it and they think it's worth marketing, they could send me a cease and desist letter and say, you don't own that anymore. We own that. And they could sell it and claim the, you know, X dollar off of it. Extremely onerous, one-sided document, which under basic contract law, from my understanding of it, where they fail in this is basically two different ways. They fail because the original license is in perpetuity, and it states for Dungeons and Dragons and the D20 mechanic and so forth and so on. They don't have a revocation clause in it. The other, you know, they gave open creative control to everybody for it. They literally gave it the fuck away.
Mm-hmm.
Now they want to try to weasel a way into making people pay them and give them their stuff. So the old license will pretty much probably end up standing up in court and not be revocable. And the other side of it is, from what has been leaked and discussed online by lots of people in many, many hours worth of videos that you probably don't want to go into tonight because you only have a certain amount of time you want to be on, is that it's incredibly onerous and one-sided. It's an utterly one-sided thing. And they can change, one of the other caveats is they can change the terms of their open license, their 1.1 open license, at any time.
Mm-hmm.
So if their threshold today is $750,000 and they decide that they're not making enough money, they can say, okay, $25,000 is the threshold. If you make $25,000, you have to pay us a royalty, blah, blah, blah. No, you make a dollar, you need to send us a dime. Yeah, it could be. And one of the basics of contract law, when it comes down to it, is D&D undermonetized. The executive was saying, because it's bad enough for them that you're spending, you know, maybe a few hundred to $1,000 to buy all the stuff every time they republish the next version. That's not good enough for them. What they want to do is they want to try to figure out ways with the one D&D thing to stick you for everything they can, like it's a console game, to make more revenue coming in and soak the DMs and players. But the thing where they fail is one-sided contracts can be voided by a judge as onerous. So, like, if I wrote a contract for you, between you and I, and I have all the say in everything, and you have no say in anything other than you signing the contract, you might actually be able to get that contract voided,
mm-hmm.
depending on the judge and, you know, politics and whatnot.
Right.
But, your average mortgage contract comes incredibly close to that, but you know, falls short of it because sometimes people do beat the mortgage companies when the mortgage companies make mistakes. Don't, you know, guarantee it because of politics and a whole other kettle of fish. But no, that's basically it. And the funny thing is I have a bunch of notes where I was getting ready to start pulling together a combined RPG and wargaming system that's scalable and simplified way down. It has nothing to do with, like, it would not fall under the open license to start with.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think that's funny.
Yeah.
That's like my B project starting with gamers is the A project is going to be the book about the all the estate issue stuff.
Yeah, that's a novel, a huge novel, and just by itself, you know, it's insane. But anyhow, yeah, that's not.
Yes,
it is. Yeah, to me, it sounds like this Hasbro was to kill the goose that lays the golden eggs. You know.
That's another analogy that's been thrown out there a lot, and they've been mocked for that. Have you guys never heard the story of the, you know, golden goose? Yeah, or the goose that lays the golden egg, yeah. So it's the Hasbro thing, like one idiot executive who doesn't understand the game, doesn't understand the culture, who, you know, probably busy sipping a $100 latte at the time with her pinky finger out, basically... They totally just screwed up,
mm-hmm.
and it's been like, you know, basically a big old shark. I'll use the word shark instead of the other equal term I was thinking, but a Sharknado that's just gathered more and more momentum as the last few weeks have gone by, and more people have looked at it, and a lot of these people that are talking about it aren't just, I mean, you have a lot of angry content creators out there. You have a lot of angry channels out there that talk about D&D that don't want to have their channels taken away or be told they have to shut down or anything. And you have, but the real thing is, you have a lot of lawyers that are involved in the gaming community that are looking at this going, oh no, Kemosabe, this is not going to fly. Yeah, that's the big part right there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Well, in my mind, yep. Hasbro's, you know, is doing it out of fear. You know, they see their numbers declining. That's the only reason I can imagine ever trying to do this. Or if they say, you know, they might do something, they really see something stupid, which is, you know, how do we make more money versus, you know, with less effort, you know. I understand, you know, the whole idea of under monetizing, you know, well, yeah, but at the same time, There's something about community that itself has a price. Yeah, you might be able to monetize more. You know, monetize your current your next IP or whatever, you know, let's say your IP better by changing the way the licensing works. But the question is, how long will that last? Because now what you're doing is you're putting a barrier on who can create content, who can make money off that content, and therefore your overall, when it comes to that industry that's around the IP that you created, well, now it's going to shrink. Because only certain people who have the money to invest in creating a product and paying the license fees, paying forth, you know, getting through these onerous deals and hoping that nothing happens, because Lord knows, Starfleet Battles has that one thing that happened with Starfleet Battles, which was not Starfleet Battles, it was Starfleet Commander. Starfleet Commander originally wasn't under Paramount, but all of a sudden, what they wanted to do, Paramount got involved, and they won, all the licensing for the full, Star Trek, IP, and it didn't sell, as well as they expected. Lord knows that version that came out was buggy, which that does not help. And this is before the day of Steam, where you actually could then go and just, okay, it's buggy. Okay, we're releasing an update in a week, and this will fix all the problems. This was before the advent of the internet. If your software that you shipped was buggy, how could you? You can't update that software very easily. You could actually
those days.
Yep. So if it didn't work on your computer or it crashed, you couldn't play. And that's one thing that happened to me is I had had that release and I installed it and it crashed. It's like, okay, well, I guess I'm not playing it. And that doesn't, especially with the gaming community, holy freaking cow, you want to kill yourself. That's one way to do yourself. And since it didn't, produced, didn't sell very well. What happened is Paramount then going, okay, thank you, and pull the license, because they are allowed to do that every single year. They get to review it and say, okay, whether are you doing right by our IP? Well, you're not making enough money. Okay, I'm sorry. Boom, they pull the license, and all of a sudden you can't create games. You can't, the product that you're produced, which is based on the IP of somebody else, now becomes zero, zilch. It's not worth a dime. And they closed up shop. Yeah, Starfleet Command. Yep. Yeah. Did I say Starfleet Commander?
That happens. Well. And that's the kind of thing that happens when executive suits get involved instead of, gaming people. There's that.
Okay, but at the same time...
It's
at the same time, here's the thing.
Go on.
The problem with some gaming people is they don't think about the monetization, meaning actually earning, having the ability to take a product and actually earn money from the product. And you have to do that for the product to grow. You have to have game designers be paid for the thoughts and the IP that they create. So, and Lord knows, I know the thinking behind it. No, not necessarily the thinking, but, kind of the thinking behind it, because I'm a developer, I'm a programmer. The whole concept, the whole idea of marketing is a foreign concept to me. I definitely don't know how to market things properly. I really don't. And that's why, SFB Online and FedCom Online, things like that have not grown as large as they could be. And that's because I don't know how to market. But of course, the real question...
Well, yeah, if they really wanted that future success, they would have to do a marketing campaign.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And I don't know how...
Ads out.
Right, I don't know how to do it. And the thing is, to have someone to help me with it would probably cost me more than I'd ever be able to make back from it. Because that's also, of course, an issue.
It all depends.
Well, it's an issue with Starfleet Battles and Starfleet Universe. It's a limited, it's a relatively small group. You, even with past, you might say you got 100,000 people total. You know? And the question is, how many of those will ever come back? And of course, how many of those are still alive? Yes.
Well, actually, an interesting thought is how much has, like, did ADB ever advertise over their lifetime in the right places? Because I remember seeing, you know, the occasional ad for them in, like, the old Dragon magazines and some other places, but that's still a niche community thing. But now, you could reach literally millions of people by just, you know, throwing up an ad on YouTube where they basically stick it into monetized, you know, stuff.
Yeah, well,
people searches. So,
okay,
1 million gamers will see your ad, mm-hmm. where 20 years ago maybe 30,000 gamers might see it through a Dragon magazine or something like that. I don't know the numbers for the Dragon magazines, but you know, you get the gist of what I'm saying.
Yeah, I understood.
How much does that?
Well, that's
you have a good team putting together marketing stuff.
Right, understood. But okay. Two things. One, when it comes to SMB marketing, ads don't really work. Because they have tried ads on Google. And basically, they got nothing. They got no return on it. And, you got these link sites, you know. Oh, it's awful. The way I feel like when it comes to marketing SMB, what it really requires is a good social media presence. And that means doing, they did do some marketing, some YouTube videos, but it's one of those things that you have to do constant YouTube videos, you know, at least like one a week at minimum, you know, talking about your product, talking about yourself. You have to have basically a social media presence. It's a constant social media presence. And that's not what ADB is. You know, and Lord knows, maybe one of these days that there'll be someone to buy up, you know, ADB, and the IP that they have. And push it forward, you know, because there's still a gaming community out there. There's still gamers, people who like playing tactical board games, you know. And
yeah, but it's also such a glut, too.
Yeah,
it really is.
Oh, understood. And Lord knows you have so much competition out there, given that, you know, SMB is so old when it comes to the tactical board games. It's very mature, you know, compared to today's games, and then it might require, you know, a rethinking, because to me the beauty of SMB, and always has been the beauty of SMB, has been, of course, the detail that's actually ingrained in SMB, you know, and that's what I always considered. All that detail is what gives me the feeling of realism. And this is what I feel about it. I'm not quite sure this is the case. And let me just put that out there right now. And that is that I feel like most people, for that kind of level of detail, they want it to be a computer-based game. And I think even a computer-based game, holy freaking cow. Can you imagine trying to get all those rules that are currently part of SFB into a computer-based game? If I had been working for the past 10 years for implementing the rules, I might have been able to get it done. I might be able to create an engine which actually implemented all the rules. But, you know, that's a lot of work.
Oh yeah, it would be a ton of work, but I think a very large development team that's experienced with that sort of thing could probably pull it off. The flip side of it, though, is I think if you get it into a computer-based real-time simulator game,
no,
it would stop being SFB real.
Right, exactly. When you change it to be real time, that's when you choose it. Now, here's the thing. Real time is not always required. It isn't. Not in computer games. They're not all, it doesn't always require. Just the thing about, I want to say Ecom, but I don't think, is that what it's called? Where you have basically, What?
You go turn by turn and have your call for action.
Right. You say, okay, this is what I'm doing. I'm going here, 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 here. You plan out where you're going, what you're going to do, and then you go execute, boom, and you execute your turn. And there's computer based games that are exactly like that. You know, heck, even BattleTech is like that. So, turn-based games are still very, very viable. You know, it might require, you know, doing something like what I said, which is what I like, which is, you know, plot your movement, plot your actions. You know. Make it a little more of a challenge in that category in that case. But anyway,
I don't think it needs to be plotted. You can still have it as free movement and free action. It's just you're making your call when it comes to be your turn to do something.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a whole other issue.
Agreed. Okay, well, with that, I think we will wrap it up for this evening. Doug, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and I can't wait to see you on Saturday.
Yep.
Yes, I'll be there both
Saturday.
I will be there Saturday and
Hopefully
Sunday, just to let
listening.
You know.
Crap. Oh, I know.
No, I just thought Thank of something I forgot to do. I meant to send an email to a guy about this weekend. Maybe I'll just give him a call. Not now. Probably tomorrow. Okay. But anyway, Doug, you have a good night.
Thank you. Okay.
Hi. Yeah, this was another one of those nights where we talked over many, many topics, got in one minor topic that I wanted to discuss, which was, you know, that idea I have for the game. And we got to talk about even the whole OGL kerfuffle, which is interesting. I definitely found out more information about what Hasbro is wanting to do, because I don't follow YouTubers that talk about, you know, that kind of stuff. I follow different wholly different kinds of YouTubers. Usually they're not about games, but anyway, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.